Hey there, listener. This is just a reminder that this is part two of our second roundtable discussion. Make sure you go back and listen to part one from last week before you listen to this part. Thanks. Enjoy.
Welcome back, guys. So we're going to close out this segment, Spaces and Places, with one more question. When you hear the word legacy, what does that mean to you as a woman? And are you building or creating one? And what does that look like?
For me, legacy means what did I do as an artist to create opportunities for other people, to give voice to people who don't have a voice, to help the progression of our art for underrepresented communities. That's what legacy means to me.
Becca, tell our audience about your production company. What is your focus?
Yeah, so that was kind of like a happy accident. I started out as, I've always been a writer. Got into acting in college, fell in love with it. And I just pursued it hard on, and I kind of got hired in the audition process. I was within these auditions, but they were just for these one-dimensional, stereotypical Black female characters. So I'm like, why don't I just create my own content? And this is right when like YouTube videos were becoming a big thing, and streaming wasn't really like a popular thing still yet. But I'm like, we have phones, why don't we just create our own stuff? So I wrote a short film in 2019 before the pandemic, and it took us like with the waiting through COVID, it took us like 2-3 years to get through that, make it. And so I just formed my own production company because I was just tired of waiting, tired mm-hmm. of just auditioning. I was tired of waiting, and it's like, I'll be waiting forever if I'm just expecting someone to discover me. It's like, I can write. I know filmmakers who are local and hustling in on the same level as I am. Like, why don't we just make the art we want to make and do it our way? And yeah, so I formed the production company, and that's still my motto. I want to create art for underrepresented communities, about the human condition. That's really important to me. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's how it came about.
What about, that's wonderful. And I have seen some of your work, and I'm really glad that you're an actor producer, because it's really, I think that's a good combination. You know, when you understand performance and story and embodying the character, but also what it means to develop that as a producer. So I think that's a really good hyphenate too in the industry, and it lends really well in other storytelling mediums as well, if you choose to go into audio as well. You know, what about you, Tanya? What does legacy come up for you, and what are you creating?
Well, first I want to say I loved what Becca did, because this is probably either personal issues, maybe it's culturally based, Farida, but I wait for permission. Like, I tend to wait for permission to do something. And you really can't do that. You just have to do it. And, you know, that's something I still struggle with. You know, I definitely do much better in an atmosphere of like work. That's why it's nice that we're emphasizing community, because maybe it's not a traditional work atmosphere. It's a community, and mm-hmm. the community support that helps. I'm not sure legacy is, it's like a loaded word, right? Like what? In one way, my kids are my legacy. Mm-hmm. So hopefully I haven't done too much damage. We'll find out, I guess, when they're older. I guess for me, I'm a very nostalgic person. And, you know, I always tend to like reminisce and remember things. And I think it's important not to forget stories, and forget stories as the storytellers are fading. So to be able to capture, you know, stuff my grandmother used to say, or grandmothers, plural, you know, or our elders, you know, try and like preserve the stories and actually preserve the stories now, because I think that seems to be the thread in the three shows that I've done and the show that I'm doing now, is that you're trying to preserve, even as you're doing it right now, you're preserving a moment, even if it's a story now, currently. Mm-hmm. It's an important kind of picture in time. So
yeah, there is a very there's a huge weight of importance on archiving and documenting and snapshotting history as we're living it. Mm-hmm. Because if we wait to not, if we don't do that, or we fail to do that, then someone else will write our narrative for us. Mm-hmm. So as storytellers, does not matter what a medium, right? Because we're all storytellers at heart as humans, right? We're always connecting, and we connect through stories. Tell me about your day. Where did you come from? Where did you grow up? These are stories. We're always that's how we're building community. Like now more than ever, like I don't think there's enough storytelling, especially because we have thought that there's only certain stories that can be made. And I think the indie space, the podcast space. So Tanya, before we move on to our next, I guess I was going to ask you your question on what is one of your podcasts that you are producing right now that you feel like is archival or documenting or snapshotting history that you think
so? It is definitely snapshotting, and it's a proper archival history project. It's very niche, which is one thing about podcasting that people have forgotten, and the whole rush to make money and make it more like films and television, is that it originally was a space where people tell their weird, quirky stories, or, you know, it was like fangirls and fanboys geeking out on something. And so this is about Goan Christian musicians in Karachi, Pakistan. They were a large part of the building of the city, our minority communities. And especially now, as unfortunately things have gotten more intolerant, those communities have been shrinking. So they were a large part of the nightlife scene and the nightclub era, which is another sort of thing that has disappeared from Pakistan. So I'm speaking to a lot of these aging rock and rollers, definitely having trouble with finding more of the aging rock and roll women. And where we're sort of like trying to do an audio documentary on it. It would be a great documentary, but podcasts are cheaper.
When you shared that with me, like you were telling me about it, I think it's very fascinating. I think that's something else that when we think of like representation and communities that are underrepresented, we always just think about like our community or our that. Like sometimes there's the allyship comes from just bringing stories that you otherwise are not seeing and just being producing those from that perspective, you know? And I think that's great. Go ahead.
And it's also the style. And then I will shut up after this. It's also the style. For example, people talk about representation. There are a ton of, they see chat shows, like little podcast shows that are chat shows, or there are a lot of like, you know,
what does Desi mean for people who don't know what Desi means? Because I know what Desi means, but...
Yeah, so Desi actually means of country. So you kind of end up referring to the diaspora as someone Desi. So, you know, if you see somebody Indian, you're like, oh, they're Desi, or that's a Desi thing to do, you know, if they're doing
something. Pakistanis, South Asians, yeah.
South Asians in general. Yeah. But why can't we have a music archival podcast? You know, there are a ton of like for Western music, so why not do this? You know,
I love it.
And that's the interesting thing about representation. Everybody keeps talking about we need more voices, but they're like, but not that. You know, so you come across these sort of barriers and you're like, well, why not tell a story about that?
So a common thread I just found is that, you know, you just said give yourself permission. I that's kind of like the rebel in me. I grew up in that culture that we were waiting to like, am I allowed to do something? Even though I was born and raised in America, I kind of grew up with that in the background, and I was like, nope, I'm not listening. So I was the black sheep, right? I didn't care. But I love how you're like, so Becca is like, okay, I'm going to create, I see something's missing. I'm going to go create a production company for that missing element. Same thing that you're doing. You gave yourself permission and you're bringing, and I think that is the beauty of storytellers. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I'd love to know Eugenie's and Becky's take on this, is that when we were under the pandemic and lockdown, from that time to the strikes, which are affecting the industry and have affected economically, there is not enough appreciation for storytellers or artists. Yet we all have a subscription to a streamer or multi-streamers. We all have TV or a Spotify account or a radio, maybe if you're still listening to radio. So where is the appreciation for storytellers? Like, why don't we, first, we're out here becoming independent because A, there's enough wealth, but there's not enough development happening across these communities. So we're like, okay, well, I'll just create my own stuff because you're not buying it from me. And these are, there's a vacuum. There's a space of stories and we don't want to be, you know, like, where is our representation? So we'll go indie. But where do you think the appreciation is for storytellers and arts in America right now, where we're, this is why this is happening? Like, I feel like that's a conversation that has to be had too, right? Like, as women and as storytellers and representatives, I guess, in some regards to our experiences. What do you think, Eugenie? What prompted you to create your production company and the projects you're doing?
Well, I loved, okay, I did not like the idea of COVID, but I loved being in the house and getting work done and writing and flushing out things. And I think for me specifically, mine, I get happened by accident. Somebody was like, oh, we need a producer for these short Forbes 30 under 30. And I was like, all these people that are 30 under 30 and meeting these crazy thresholds. And I'm like, this is kind of crazy because y'all are raising capital and millions of dollars. And so it gave me this momentum. I think everybody on this call, being a BIPOC woman, I don't think we were ever told or are born with that energy of go and do anything, as far as like, if you see something, go do it. You could do anything. I mean, my mom used to say that, but my dad was always like, you should have went to medical school or a lawyer, you know? And I'm like, oh, okay, well. And I think I just got so frustrated with, I have not seen, I mean, a couple of the stories, I mean, Jasmine Guy and Zoe Kravitz's mother, when I was a kid, I was like, oh, I could see certain women. I was obsessed with Vanessa Williams. I loved Viola Davis. I loved Lucille Ball. And I just was like, oh my God, but there's still not a lot of that on television. And I think, Frida, when you and I met this woman, I was like, we don't want to see any more slave stories. And this woman was like, well, we want to see that. And I was like, no, we don't want to see that. Because so far, what you told us from growing up as a child, I can either live the lifestyle of the Cosby Show. I mean, you know, or my history is slavery, you know, but that's not my history. That's a part of me, but that's not how my mother was raised. And the rich culture of like being brought up in a rodeo and as a Black woman and Black cowboys, we don't see that. We don't see that these people were independently running their own town, shops, banks, all these things that African Americans and Black people were doing. We don't see that on television. And we get a glimpse of it and we're like, oh, wow. Because we're like, where did this come from? Because it's not in our history books and it's not on our television shows. And if it is, it gets diluted, you know? And I think that inspired me. And it's been a challenge because, you know, you meet these writers, and I've been working with a lot of writers. And sometimes as you're pushing through, it's like, oh, do you have a big name? And I'm like, not yet. We are the big name, you know? Because I'm like, we are on the way. But it's like, if I feel a story, I know I'm in development with a couple of stories and I'm like, this has to go. It has to go. Meaning we have to produce it. We have to get the money. We have to keep moving because if not, we're responsible for, like you said, the history that the narratives that we are and what we have for ourselves.
We have to be proactive. Otherwise, there's like negative rhetoric out there for all communities, you know, and if we don't take charge of our stories, then, you know, there's someone who would hate in their heart or maybe malintent that will just put stuff out there. And I mean, a lot of tropes and stereotypes and negative images in media and all that is from that, because I feel like I think culturally, and this is a cross culture, culturally, we just don't respect artists the way we should. And when I put artists, I consider like culture makers, right? Writers, creators, influencers, philosophers, essayists, novelists. These are culture makers, right? Like, we are putting stories out there for people to either escape to or connect with or find healing in or solace in, or to prompt critical thinking, to be reflective, to ask questions. And that is a very important job, because if we don't have it, then we're just going to be spoon-fed, this is it. And I think that's what's kind of happening within the indie space, that people are getting tired of pitching stuff and being basically like, what's like, for example, we pitched a project and I did not have like a $10 million star attached to it. My budget was not in $4 million. I don't have an A-list celebrity attached. So the general meeting is like, even the idea is great, they don't want the project. Well, that's where you go independent. And I think now socioeconomically, and I'm only referring to studios and entertainment, where we are in 2024, the divide and within the different economic groups, the lower, middle, upper, it's farther out. Therefore, even the proximity to the industry, if you thought you were in LA, oh, it's easier, it's not. It's difficult. Even proximity to get a general meeting, it's all based on how much money you have to play in the game. And I feel like because of that, whoever's already there at the table, they're still producing the same stuff over and over again for the same audience over and over again, because it's employed by the same group of people over and over again. And more people now are being pushed out economically into the indie space. So now the question is, if we're culture makers, create the platform, where do we bring our audience into our stories? Because there isn't enough representation, and it's because, oh, there's not a measure of success. So we need someone we can attach to it so we can do that, because it's a risk averse situation, right? So now we have to figure out who's going to come and see our stuff.
I think now more and more than anything, even with people going to Art Basel, that I'm like, y'all are going to Art Basel and half these people don't even know what is going on.
Never been though. Never been.
I think more and more and more, because of social media, because of this whole influencer cultural effect. And I think again, we're in this odd place, like you said, economically, but I also think that people are leaning more into indies. I think that it's going to, well, we don't know what's going to happen in the next few years, but I think that people are leaning in. It's like a cool thing to be the artist, even though some of these people, Lord, Jesus, but I'm like, the people are like, it's a cool thing to get into artwork and to go to art shows and to go watch an indie film. And how did you see that first? And I think people are starting to get like, what is this? Don't you think people are starting to kind of have a little push of, oh, this is really dope. I don't really know how to get into this, but it's cool. And people are starting to kind of dig a little deep.
It's a double-edged sword. Like, I am chronically on Instagram, which is terrible. I really need to cut down. But there are a lot of things I hear about that isn't released in, like, you know, big blockbuster, small indie movies that I hear about through there. But that's also a double-edged sword, because also if you're an indie producer, you don't also necessarily have the bandwidth to do all that marketing. So the stuff you're hearing about goes to the makers and the creators who either were lucky to get backing or are really good at social media, and you can be a creator and not be a really good, talented creator and suck at all that stuff.
Yeah, I'm sure we have to get interns who are like these the younger generation that just lives on
like boom, 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 boom.
I'm like, how do you create and do social media? Like,
yeah,
like,
I can't do
I'm
it.
Trying to write,
I can't.
Produce, it's so difficult.
Becky, where do you think we are as a culture in America about appreciating artists and storytellers? What are your thoughts?
I think a lot of people just use it like as a veg out. Like, I have to, you know, I just want something to watch, something that's not reality. I'm tired of my reality. Give me something different to look at. So I really don't know.
Yeah, but that's a good point though. I mean, like I said, it serves different purpose and functions for all of us, but I do think we need to celebrate more of the arts, because arts are culture and they are also what keeps stories alive and building accurate stories. One more question, we'll move on to our final segment. Do you create more or do you consume more?
Well, shit.
Consume. 100% consume. I wish I could get paid for consuming, because I would be I'd be really sitting pretty then.
I can say that I have been watching the movies that are up for the four-year consideration, because I've been going to a lot of these screenings, and it has got me very excited about filmmaking again after this year. So I have been consuming, and working a side job and pulling together as much as I can mentally, creating. So I think I have a 3-3-3.
That's why she gets the big table.
What about you, Becca?
I think it's 50-50. I love to watch TV and film just to study it. I know a lot of writers love to read scripts, and I do too, but I study by watching film, TV. So yeah, it's 50-50. Sometimes I feel like we should have to find like creating as a writer producer, because I feel like even if I'm not writing, you're still like creating in some way, whether it's brainstorming or whatever you got to do. There's a whole process to it, but it's 50-50. Just keep it simple.
Yeah, we're always like conceptualizing and ideating, like, you know, in those most weirdest times. Like, you're like you're at Trader Joe's and you're like, oh, that would be a really great idea, and you're like, let me put it in my phone. What about you, Becky? Are you creating more, consuming more? What's that balance like for you
right now? I am consuming more, you know, with work and my son's senior year, being a basketball mom, just going to school. It's like I have zero time left. So definitely when I have time, I'm consuming, but would like to be more creative and, you know, get back to writing scripts and being on set. But yeah, this time isn't in my corner right now.
It's okay. You know, I think that's okay. Something I've learned is that life is very seasonal and cyclical in that regards. And like, I'm trying to like, if I feel like, so I don't consume. I don't consume when I'm in a creative mode. Like, I like to go into my hibernation and I tunnel vision. Like, I haven't been on Instagram in like 3 years. I have an account that I don't know if it's on or not, but like,
good
I don't
for you. Don't get on that.
I can't then create. I get the scrolling. It's just too much. Yeah. But also from a conceptualizing ideation development, I guess, Venn diagram, when we're always kind of like hyper imprinting by what we're consuming, and it's kind of like seeping into us immersively, we can't like be explorers authentically and also mine our own stories from our vault, right? So my thing is, I like the analog days where internet wasn't in your face or in your hand all the time. And we were pushed to be bored and seek our natural authenticity, which was our natural curiosity. Like, okay, you know, I'm just going to go to a gallery. I'm just going to go to the library. I'm just going to do nothing. And that nothingness will then, something will emerge from that. But I have to be okay to be in that nothingness. And I don't know if it's just the way my brain is wired. I cannot handle that much stimulation and also create.
That's great that you recognize that.
Yeah, I can't create. I can't. Oh. I can't focus. It won't work for me. For me, what works is like to.
Maybe that's my problem. Maybe I need to get.
Are you the oldest, Pedro? Are you the oldest?
I unfortunately am the firstborn. Yes.
So I guess, like you said, basketball mom, my brother was in every single thing basketball and we were in all the sports. If the word bored came out of our mouth, my mom pretty much said we were ungrateful. So we were never allowed to be bored. And I always had my card pulled on red. So it was always on punishment and in my room. So I could create worlds. And my parents were like, who are you talking to? And I was like, I was always creating regardless of any chaos around me. I think coming to LA, I got lost in like certain shuffles, but like, it doesn't matter what, the world could be burning upside down. Try to find a way to paint it, like take a camera, let's get this, let's document it, regardless. So I've always thrived in some form of chaos. Now I like organize chaos. So I don't have, I'm like any, all the stimulations, I'm okay. Yeah. I'm the opposite ADHD.
That's great. I think it's important to recognize, like, because all our brains are different, and whatever works for one person may not work for the other person. I know for me, what I've noticed, I read a lot of scripts. I work for a couple of producers, so I read a lot of scripts, and I'm just reading the same scripts all the time. And now I've started taking meetings with writers outside of LA, because what I've noticed is, and this is not just my experience, right? Like, these are other producers, their experience as well when they're reading scripts, is that people kind of fall into this trap of the same stuff, but a little bit different. And after reading 20 scripts on the same stuff, you're just like, everyone's living in this bubble. There is no individuality and expression. And I feel like we can be in LA, but I like to meet writers outside of the LA bubble because they're writing differently. Because once you've been here, after a while, everyone starts writing the same stuff. They're all speaking the same language. And it's like, unless you're a very seasoned writer, it's really hard to, if you're newer, I'm just not impressed. And I'm not a writer, but I can tell you I've come across great work. And it's always like more mature writers outside of the bubble, people with a lot more perspective and growth. And I do think writing and storytelling gets better with time. And that I think also goes into like audio fiction and audio narrative series as well, Tanya. Because if you look at this, the level of creativity you bring with your own as a producer or storyteller, you're bringing a lot of stuff, but it's creative producing. You know, you can't monetize it. You can't show it on a resume, but it's your lived in experience, right? And that goes into your taste levels. That goes into your editing, goes into like, I like that. I don't like that. So I think in that respect, age kind of works better Our final segment for today, which we're over, but we're going to keep it short and sweet. We are beautiful by whose standards? Okay. We are beautiful by whose standards? Adornment and female gaze. Can you share or recall a moment when you adorned yourself for yourself or then for someone else's gaze? How was that different and how did you feel?
You go first, Farida.
Adorning. Okay. I know when dressing to impress and then dressing for yourself are two different things for me sometimes. Like, yeah, I mean, I'm comfortable in sweats 7 days a week. Like but I do feel like I get better treatment when I'm more polished. The world does reflect me better treatment when I am maybe wearing more makeup, my hair styled, I'm more accessorized. I feel like there's a change in that. Now, I don't care for that stuff anymore. But it's funny because the question arises from, like, how much of what we wear and express our femininity is for ourselves, or is it for men, or for whoever we're attracted to, or for work, or for society's expectations. So we are beautiful, but by whose standards? Yeah, I mean, I've kind of shape-shifted. I've dressed to go on a date to be more attractive to a man, and I've also dressed for to get the job, dressed to impress. So I don't know if that's a reflective question, so it's open to interpretation.
Yeah, I think I dress the way that I like. It is different when you're, you know, going for a job interview. You want to kind of fit the role. You want to see how the, you know, go on the company's webpage, see how they dress and kind of mimic them. But because I have a daughter, I'm always kind of like, you have to dress the way you like. When she was in Corpus, she had a friend who came over and, you know, the friend was like, hey, I have a bikini. It's a thong. Can I wear it? I'm like, we're going to a beach. What do you mean? Can she wear it? I guess. Yes. And she's like, oh, well, she was worried someone may say something. I'm like, when is she going to wear it? I mean, are you going to wait until you're my age and, you know, you might not have the body you have now? Or are you going to just, you know, you have to live your life. You have to dress to make you happy. You have to do things to make you happy. And so that's what I wanted to impart on my child, because I know growing up for me, I had parents who were like, you have to cover up. You can't wear this. You know, you're too big for that. Give it to your sisters. It'll fit them better. And I didn't want my child to have that. I want my child to be comfortable in whatever she wants to wear, be comfortable in her own skin, be comfortable in her body, and just know that, hey, you dress for yourself, not for other people. Now, of course, if you have to go and get a job, yeah. But she's in marine biology, so now she's like in her element. She likes to, you know, she wears whatever the hell she wants. So it's good. So I'm glad I taught her that, and I'm glad that that's how she was. Because even in high school, she was, you know, she would go run, you know, she was in track. So she would be like, they were fussing because I took my shirt off, but I had my sports bra under. And I'm like, oh, well, you know, what's the rules? What is the guidelines? And she's like, I don't know, but the boys run with nothing. Like, they don't have tops on at all. So I'm like, well, that's something you have to go talk to your coach about and see, you know, see what they're saying, because that's the school rule. So, but I'm like, when you're out by yourself, you should be able to do, you know, what you want, because you dress how you're comfortable.
Hmm. So Naomi Wolf, she's an author. She talks about the beauty myth that many women have been influenced by external sources. For example, beauty standards created by marketing and cosmetic companies are now trendy plastic surgeries that fit into the current version of a woman. Where do you find yourself with that myth? Have you ever conformed to any beauty myths? And then you're like, why?
Oh, yeah.
I think all of us have to some extent. It's impossible not to with all the messaging and also being, you know, South Asian.
Or a woman. I mean, it's just tough being a woman, right? There's so many.
I mean, those aunties, like, I know when I'm going back to Pakistan, I'm more stressed about losing weight and getting into shape for that than I am just in my day to day, because I know somebody's going to say something about my weight. Yeah.
I can, I'll add to that, Tanya, because as a South Asian woman myself, and I know, like, fat phobia is such a thing in my culture, and at least it was for me growing up, and I've always been an overweight.
Still is, yeah.
Plump.
Not surprising, though, not surprising at all.
You're so beautiful if you just lost some weight, you know, like, and that's something, I don't know if it's like the colonizing effect of being from from South Asia, where, like, you know, colorism and your European standards, the lighter you are, the thinner you are, that's considered the ideal. And that's what it's, I see that in Pakistan, and maybe I'm not in India so much, but definitely in Pakistan, skin bleaching and being thin is, that's the standard of beauty. And if you watch any of the Pakistani television stars, you would think the whole country is skinny and fair, which is not an accurate depiction at all of the country. It's very diverse, and there's all different shades of brown and all different body types, but you only see those actresses. So every woman who's not fair skinned, or Skinny is like starving herself or developing eating disorder to fit in. And I'm just like, you know what? I have hips. I can't help it. This is like, I, even if I lost as much weight as I could, I am a hippie wide woman. Like, it is what it is. Like, I'm going to look different in that outfit versus another woman, you know? And I think that's a result of colonizing. I think that is definitely because of that. And I, the sad part for me is when my people do that to my people, you know, it's bad. At, like, you know, when you go, like, we, like, this is, this came up in the first round table. When I went to Pakistan, first time, I was like so excited because there was like a country full of people that look like me. And it was so like, oh my gosh, because I was born in America and I was always the outlier. I was a kid that was the one token South Asian kid with the mom that wore shalwar kameez and spoke a different language and all these things. So when I went to that country, I was like, oh my God, it's going to be so great. But then you find a whole other set of mean girls and weird things. And you're like, wait, what? I mean, I, this is a country full of women that are like me, but then there's that too. So it's,
I think cause there's skin bleaching. There's a lot of skin bleaching, like in, and I think with all, within all of our nationalities, and cultures. I also think it's, I don't know. I've had a different experience. I grew up wearing uniforms my entire life until going to high school. And at that point, it wasn't until I shot the documentary that I was working with one of my girlfriends, and she was in the, she's in the process of transitioning. And she was like, you know, and we ended up going to high school together. And she was like, you know, I, you were always yourself. And I felt like when I came to LA, I was really bullied for wearing whatever I always wanted to wear, because I always wore what I wanted to wear. And so for me, it's like double-sided, because I've gained 10, 15 pounds off and on from all the things, from a plan B to a breakup to everything. And I'm really hard on myself because consciously I know diabetes runs in my family. A lot of the women are pre-diabetic. I personally, like, went to a 6:30 class and hiked this morning for my mental health. Because if I don't get it done for my mental health, then it's, I'm still came home and ate a bag of chips. But, and I had a salad or some gumbo. Yeah. But again, for my mental health, I'm just like, I feel better when I'm not carrying so much extra. Now I have hips and some boobs, but if other areas are a little tighter, I just feel better. Like, as far as moving faster, getting stuff done, I'm less sluggish. What I'm putting in my body, I've become extremely more health conscious. But, like, I like to juice. I like sour juice. Makes you feel better. Makes you glow. Beet juice is so good for me. I wish we were having that as a kid. I used to have beets out the can. So all of those things, it's like I understand the standard of beauty, but it's also, I think we should all take into consideration what's the standard of ourselves. You know, like, I know after going on a long walk, I'm able to process my thoughts. Mm-hmm. And so that may not be with everybody. If I go to like boxing class, I'm calmer. I'm easier to deal with. So I think, yes, there are standards. I also think being more in California, like even my mom coming to visit, there's a more health conscious as far as what we are putting in our bodies. And I've had so many family members pass of cancer and diabetes that I've been more on that versus like, this is the standard. Mm. But it should be more of a standard way of like cautious of what we are putting in our bodies, which then results in also hair, neath tail, like all the things, you know? Yeah,
we are, thank you for saying that. We're going to say goodbye to Tanya. Bye, Tanya.
Yes, so nice to meet all of you. Keep in touch. It's getting really good. I'm sad to leave. Bye. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
So I'm actually working on a short film next. I've written, it's called Lighten Up, and it's about colorism. So it's about my experiences with it in Texas. When I first moved here from Georgia, just like 90% Black. I remember when I moved to Texas, way better. It was very, very not diverse at that time. So, but I just want to speak to you as far as the industry, what I've seen as an actress and I think works on both sides. I've seen it on both ends, from all shades. So, but I think in the end, especially from a Texas standpoint, not so much LA, New York, maybe, but actually maybe depending on those markets too. But I noticed there is a certain like type typically that they'll have like for romantic leads. There is a standard of a type of actress they'll typically cast versus like a Viola Davis, who is like an amazing actress. Mm-hmm. But just seeing her journey or her transition into the career in her career to where she is now, to where she started out, and the role she started out for, there is unfortunately prejudice, colorism in casting, and where you might have a bias of a casting director and they'll just typecast you into a certain role because of the shade of your skin. Mm-hmm. When you're speaking about people from Pakistan, like I at UTD I met a girl from India and she was my skin tone. I'm like, I didn't know there were people from India and I was like, my like skin. So it's like all I've seen in media was like lighter skin, lighter. So I thought that was what people from that country look like. But as I grew up and became more educated and involved, I'm like, no. So there is a lot of impact from colonialism and slavery that still impacts our media today. Because even the entertainment industry has a history of racism and prejudice from those old 1930s and 50s and movies back then. So
I think it's tough both ways, right? I was up for this part and I was so excited for it. It was an AFI film and it was a feature. I made it. I was in a producer session, directors, everything. And I went to a casting director workshop and the casting director was like, why are you here? And I said, because I didn't get the part. And she goes, you didn't get the part because you weren't dark enough.
It goes both ways.
And so I was like, what? And that's been, it's like, oh, so now this, now they're like, this part is in. Now you need to be darker and this and that. And they're like, oh, well, that this. And I'm like, okay, y'all, why can't we just focus on the dialect?
Yes. Okay, Farida, we're going to have a colorism.
No, we will. Because there's no way we can get through all of this today.
Yeah.
Also, because we need to wrap up. Becky, did you want to add before you wrap up and we'll close up the segment?
Growing up in Louisiana and where I grew up, I'll say like my dad used to say, you're either poor or you're not. And so it didn't matter what color you were. If you were in that social class, that was it. So we didn't really have, I mean, it was across town, you had it, but where we were, it was like everybody was a community banded together.
That's the difference from Louisiana and Texas. My favorite is from Lake Charles. And so I love
It's like, who's your mom? Who's your dad? Everybody knew each other. Yeah, exactly. it was kind of that way. Even when I moved here, I was shocked. Like, you kind of didn't have it. So no one asked until my daughter was in high school. And I think someone told her she looked exotic. And I was like, what does that even mean?
Yeah.
I don't know.
They're like, you're not black? Which one of your moms is white? I was like, they're like, which one of your parents is white? Because you have green eyes and blue eyes. And I'm like, neither of them. They're both black. My mom's from Louisiana.
Right. People just assume. It's like, right. Yeah.
That was with my children too. Even my son came home and he's like, someone asked me what color I was. And he's like, I told him I was kind of peachy. And I was just like,
I've got a peach.
Yeah. I don't know. It's like, it just, you know. I don't know. I think if it's being taught and if it's, you know, I don't know.
From the parents in the home. Yeah,
I did one film in Louisiana and, you know, me being new, I was just, my thing was you had to be in Lafayette because that's where we were shooting. And the lady who came, she was like, thank you so much for casting me. No one would have ever cast me. I'm like, hey, I just needed you here. I need somebody who is local and you are local. And I, you know, my nephew who was shooting, he's like, you didn't look at the headshots. You didn't do this. I'm like, if they can act and they had a, you know, a good video they sent me, that's all I need.
I love that.
I love that.
Yeah. You know,
that's how it should be.
Yeah.
You know what I like about this roundtable and all the ladies that have been on the previous roundtables is that we're all being proactive and creating the change we want to see, right? I think that was something Becca also alluded mentioned in her bio. It's true. Like, you just have to be that trailblazer. If you're not seeing something, just go create it and hopefully people will follow your lead, right? Okay. One could argue that creativity and creative expression are feminine, right? Like, women are always creating. We have our wombs, they're sacred, all that. So what are you about to give birth to soon? I would like to know, what are you, gestating on something right now? Are you in the concept phase? What would you like to give birth to in the future?
I'd like to finish up a project that is called Ottoman Summer that focuses on women's reproductive rights and the challenge that we face with a multicultural family as well. And I have a children's animation and a couple of features that we're going off to get funding. So I'd like to birth a development deal, but I'd like to just birth this, and also better just relationships as far as representation, like my agent and manager. So birthing the perfect team, it's coming, but I'm just also really excited to connect with you ladies as well. And I know this is where it starts, because the bubble keeps growing.
Can I say, I've seen Eugenie's animation. She shared a short with me and a couple of producers. She is incredibly talented, and I and she's got a really great heart for story. And I really love where you're putting your emphasis and focus on this year. And I really do think it's going to go somewhere. I really, really, truly do. Because, you know, there's one thing to have the creativity, but it's another thing to have the heart, right? Like, people who think everything is like a zero sum game, they're manipulative, they're gatekeepers. But like, I feel like people who are in community, yeah, it may be longer, they play the game fair, they get more out of it too. And it's more real. So Eugenie, I truly believe in your work. Like, I really like your animation. And if you want to share it, you can with the ladies.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I did a small proof of concept, but we're almost done with the deck. And we just got a big producer on board. So I'm very, very excited.
Yeah, and I really loved it. I think you did a great job. And I'm excited to see what you do with Autumn and Summer too. And Becca, what are you birthing and creating? What are we looking at?
Ooh, what am I birthing? So I'm working on the short film, finishing a draft of my feature film, Andromeda Jones. So I am now turning that into a feature.
Nice.
I really want to talk more about death and the experience of death and loss, you know, in certain communities where it's from the perspective of a woman who feels like she has to be this like strong Black female character, but really learning what true vulnerability is and life and living for yourself and not just existing. So. And I'm just working on getting my production company off the ground as best as possible. And just, you mentioned this earlier, Eugenie, where I like what you said, it's just being picky about what I say yes to. And for me, it's quality over quantity. So not being so afraid to be in the rat race everyone's trying to be in, and just trusting my vision and my voice, and that I'll get where I need to be. So
yeah, I can also speak to this, Becca. Had a small role in one of my short films a while ago, and I've seen her works, Andromeda Jones, and I honestly also believe that narrative about being a strong woman, and there's so much I can even relate to that. It's like, women are everything, you know, and let's not like put women in just one category. And also, how does a woman have to get to that level of strength? It's because A, they have to be self-reliant. There wasn't support. And really, I think if all of us had the opportunity, I think that's a great topic to talk about later, because you hit on something that's really important. sometimes when we're always so strong, people forget that we're also soft. And, we need a place to land on too.
Yes.
Right? Because you're holding up everybody. You're putting out fires for everyone. And you're doing it because you've taught yourself how to be self-reliant and get shit done. But in that strength, that label of being the strong woman, it's very challenging. At first, it sounds like, oh, it's a compliment, but it's also limiting because then you're not allowed to be soft. You're not allowed to be vulnerable. No one sees you as having a spectrum of emotions, and maybe you have down days, or maybe you need to lean back sometimes. Maybe you need someone to listen to you. And I think that's what happens with ambitious women, entrepreneur women, women maybe who, like in my history, grew up with not a lot of support, maybe a lot of not emotional support. So they had to learn to be strong. And then that becomes like something where sometimes you attract the wrong type of people who just take and don't know how to give. And I think that's an important topic. I would love to see that project unfold and see how you bring that to life, because yeah, you can be it all. Why do you have to only be the strong woman? That's just one. Why strong women cry too, right?
We do. So check in on your strong friends. They need it.
Right.
You may not say it, but they need it.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thank you, Becca. What about you, Becky? What are you birthing and creating?
Right now, nothing. So I've just been trying to, I started a new job.
Becky, you're birthing something.
Yeah.
Honey, you're birthing also some graduations. So that is a... that's a big yes. Okay. Yeah, congratulations. So,
I do have some scripts that I would like to find time to put effort into and write and, you know, just get them in front of people and see if it's even a good story idea. Yeah, so that's about it. But right now my focus on my new job and school and that's about it.
Well, I think that's a lot. I think, thank you ladies for joining us today. I had a pleasant time learning more about your works and what you're doing with your women's voice. And I hope to share this with a lot more people and have some more reflective conversations with everyone. We will link everyone's URLs and websites and all the good stuff in our episode guide. So I hope to share with that with you soon. So thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I can't wait to do it again. Thank you.
Hey, I'd love to come back.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed our series, Beyond the Archetypes, a roundtable series on women's evolving identities. Before we conclude this series, I definitely wanted to emphasize why this series was created and what I think we're able to do going forward with these roundtables. See, allow me to be a little bit vulnerable with you guys. I felt very much out of place in a certain stage in my life. Where I am now, I never thought, at least when I was in my 20s, I would be where I am now. And I feel like I'm probably not the only person that feels like that, especially not the only woman, right? And the reason this came up was there were so many expectations placed by culture, families, tradition that I really wanted to fulfill. But unfortunately, or fortunately, to be determined how life pans out for me going forward, certain cards were just dealt and they didn't work out the way I was told they were going to work out. And somewhere in that, I try to make sense of what does my life mean now as a woman over 40, a woman without children, a woman who's in the arts industry, but also an impact producer. A woman that is first born American, but from parents who've settled here in America, who brought their culture and their expectations. And then someone who is a practicing Muslim. I just was like, well, what does this mean for me now? And I was in a place where I was like, who am I if I'm not a mom? Who am I if I'm not the ideal beauty or the trophy wife? Who am I if I'm not an accomplished producer? Who am I if I'm not a, if I don't live here? Who am I if all my, everything that was told to me that I have to achieve was taken away from me or dismantled or because of fate, destiny, circumstances, just kind of fell apart. And I found myself in a very tough spot mentally because I was like, all my self-worth has been wrapped up in being told, you know, be this way, be that way, look this way, be this successful. And I had to really find the self-love and tell myself, like, what if everything you planned for didn't pan out? What if you did plan to be all those things and you really wanted to be all that? How do you reconcile that? How do you make peace with it and not be resentful, bitter, depressed, and lost, and instead be forward moving, proactive, and redefine yourself? And it sounds really easy when I'm talking about it now because this is like 4 years out and I've been focusing a lot on who I am and without anything. Who am I just as Farida? I'm not someone's wife, not someone's mom. I'm not a multimillionaire. Who am I? And why is that important to know who I am? And how much of my life have I tried just to fit into boxes? You know, and I don't know. And I like I said, I don't have it all figured out. I am just trying to, I guess, to use a woohoo word, alchemize or transmute something that was challenging for me into something productive that could be insightful for maybe someone listening or maybe someone navigating their own like place in life where they're like, oh, you know, I was supposed to be like this. Like, how do we recover from that? Right. So the roundtable kind of really came out of a necessity of like just finding a place to share common sentiments or to see myself and see, you know what, maybe I'm not the only one feeling like this. And that's what I think is the powerful part of community and why peer groups and community groups and support groups and art and exchanging ideas and having intellectual discourse or even compassionate, empathic discourse and talks is so needed for all, for everyone, not just women. In general, we see stories is what keeps us connected. It's our point of contact. When you meet someone new, right away you introduce yourself. There's an arc there. Where did you graduate from? Where do you live? You know, if you're married, you'll be like, I'm married, or I have a girlfriend, and we have this, or I have a boyfriend, or I have this. There's an arc. And so I felt like, okay, maybe if we get people together and women together, we can just start sharing our different experiences and just go beyond the surface level talks of like, you know, where did we vacay last year? Or what did Sally's kitchen remodel look like? Ha ha ha. Or something stupid like that, which I'm sure no one speaks like that, at least not in my friend group, I have to say. But, and I don't know anyone named Sally, so I'm sure the kitchen remodel turned out fabulous. But sometimes we need to bridge connection by going deeper and allowing those, creating those spaces that maybe, so we can have exchange of dialogue. So that's kind of like the vulnerable why I created the roundtable. And then the roundtable series on women's evolving identities. Well, it's in order to share a collective view where we see ourselves as beyond as individuals, but also holding space for other women and their stories and their journeys. And it doesn't have to be too heavy, and it can be heavy, right? Like, I feel like I will never know what it's like to experience the loss of a child. But if I hold space for a woman who's grieving a loss of a child, I will have a better understanding of her experience. And I'll probably be a better human, a sensitive human for that. And next time when I come across something horrible like that and the world news, what's happening in the world as we know, I'm going to have a little bit more of a connection to that because I met someone who's navigated through that tremendous grief. I haven't, but I want to know their experience, her experience. Same thing with global community and our own little communities, right? Like, it's so easy to have a myopic worldview. It's so easy to be self-centered and individualistic in this world. It's so easy. And I know in the self-help world, the new age world, it's all self-love, but self-love means that you're a healthy version of yourself. So you're not out there hurting people because you haven't healed your own wounds. But it's something completely different to be so self-absorbed, where when we see women who don't look like us, who are not from our country or from our economic group or income bracket or our zip codes or our whatever the labels, identities, the markers are, we can look beyond ourselves and we can hold empathy and space for all of women's experiences. And we can see what's happening in Sudan, what's happening in Gaza, what's happening, or the women in the on the border crossing over, those women, or the women in my city of where I live. We're all women. There is no, and essentially we're all humans, right? So beyond that, beyond the archetypes, beyond the women's evolving identities, it's all about humanity, right? Like, so I think what's been happening in the world also has really, I think, calls for a greater response and for community and what does it mean to be in community? Because I think that's a buzzword that we use everywhere. Build community, global community, but what does it mean to be a community member? And how big is your community? Does it stop with people that just look like you or sound like you or have the same faith as you? Or does it extend? And I don't know. I mean, that's a reflective question for you. So it's a humble, modest request. I'm really grateful that I've had some really amazing women so far open to these roundtables. We had episode 6 and 7 earlier this year, and then we have episode 17, 18, and 19 now that we're closing out 2024 with. And the goal is just to have more open, honest, deep conversations and hold space for one another. So we see each other as humans. And yeah, maybe, you know, you don't know what it's like to be a mom. Maybe you don't know what it's like to suffer greatly due to the color of your skin or your faith or your economic situation. Or maybe you were bullied, but the bullying looked different. It was because of your age, or it's because of your weight, or it's because, you know, I don't know. But we all have stuff we're dealing with. There's a lot of friction in the world. And I feel like if we can hold heart-centered conversations and just be open to listening, reflecting, and connecting, we will see that at the end of the day, we have a lot to learn from each other and in order if we want to coexist peacefully. And it might be a lofty goal of mine, but it just felt right in this time in the world where it's just women are working multiple jobs and they don't have the resources to buy diapers or baby formula, or there are war widows, or there are women with disabilities and they're struggling in this crazy economy and they don't have support systems. They don't have a second income or a provider husband, perhaps, or they don't have family because they've been displaced. Someone who maybe made peace with the fact they'll never be a mom, but they still have that maternal love just, you know, in their heart. And they're like, what do I do with that? You know, or how to navigate grief of losing your mom, or how to navigate betrayal, how to navigate the complexities of competition and the workforce, and how women are viewed in the workforce, and how we're undervalued, underpaid, and then women of color even lesser. And just being very honest with ourselves and holding ourselves accountable for where our biases are, where we don't take our privileges for granted. Because even me making this podcast, having the digital tools and having access to amazing production people and having the time to even create, I feel like is a privilege. If I didn't have this time, because I have to work a third or fourth job, I would not be in this position to have these conversations. So I recognize my privilege. And I'm a Muslim American woman over 40, you know? So internet cat meme at the moment, which, you know, I'm leaning into it. But anyways, that was my call to action. I hope we continue these roundtables, and I hope you support myself and the Slow Dive podcast team, because the whole premise, the purpose, the why for creating the Slow Dive podcast is to really focus on listening, reflecting, connecting, and highlighting and spotlighting people and stories, people who are repurposing their adversity, repurposing their tests and trials in life. They're creating and illuminating something on their path while they're here on this planet. They're people who are framing their day with gratitude and saying, "Where I'm here for a reason, let's make something happen." And through this discourse and these discussions by a diverse group of ladies, I hope to learn from each and every one of them in all ages. And I hope to do more. And I hope if you enjoy this roundtable, you will take it upon yourself to, you know, subscribe, email me if you have any guest referrals, any if you'd like to be a part of the roundtable. We're going to try to cover a lot of different issues, but the whole goal is for us to go beyond the surface and to listen, reflect, and connect, because really, we are all interconnected. My peace is how I live and I walk through this world affects my little universe, right? And if we're all mindful of that and we hold space, maybe we can lessen the suffering in somehow, some way. Maybe through these dialogues, we can see someone else's pain and be like, "Oh man, I'm not just going to be a bystander. I'm going to be an ally." Or maybe just hearing different people's stories, or just in general discussing topics, we can be grateful for what we have been given, our blessings, whatever those blessings are. Like I said, it's really easy to have a very myopic point of view and to live in like the what you don't have. It's really hard to just continue to thrive and repurpose your life and keep it moving forward. And that's my thing. I think we're all here for a reason, and women are amazing multitaskers. So we'll just keep it moving forward, and we hope to see you again. Season 2 of the Slow Dive podcast for more roundtables. Thank you for being a part of this experience.
If you enjoyed the Slow Dive, please subscribe and leave us a positive review wherever you get your podcasts. The Slow Dive is hosted by Farida Rafiq, edited by Drew Franceblau. Our theme song is Dive by Sarah. Thanks for listening.